last 3 years, one of the main focuses of my research lab has been investigating the physiology of the Antarctic Midge, Belgica, Antarctica. In particular, we're trying to identify mechanisms that allow this insect to tolerate the extremely inhospitable environment of the Antarctic Peninsula. Polar arthropods are continually exposed to cold and dehydrated conditions throughout their development. What most people don't realize is that during the winter, they're usually in vapor pressure equilibrium with their surrounding environment, so they won't dehydrate. But during the short austral summer, there's continual periods that fluctuate between extremely dry and extremely wet. And so during this time, dehydration can be a really bad stress. And so for this study, we wanted to investigate the water balance requirements of the Antarctic Midge, and then also try to identify methods that it uses to prevent dehydration stress. So this is just a little bit about Belgica Antarctica. It lives on the Antarctic Peninsula as a two-year development. It's been really extremely understudied with the last research done on this insect in the early 1980s. So we were trying to just go back and try to follow up on a lot of this original research. So for our methods, we determined the water balance characteristics according to standard gravimetric methods established by George Warren in 1985. The next thing we did was we analyzed cuticular lipids, and this was done by recent methods that I established for analyzing small dipterans. Another thing we wanted to analyze was differences in metabolites or chemicals present within the insects. So to do this, what we did is we took Belgica Antarctica larvae, we ground them up in an organic and aqueous solution, and then we derivatized them, ran them through a GCMS, and this allowed us to analyze difference in chemicals or metabolites present within the insect. And so this is a little bit of our results. What we found is that the larvae are extremely hydrophilic. They have really high water loss rates, about 13 to 15%. Also, in relation to temperature, we found that water loss will increase very rapidly to where at about 25 degrees Celsius, they'll lose about 50% of their water in 1 hour at 0% relative humidity. And also, we analyzed this with an Arrhenius plot and found that there is no point where it breaks. This indicates there's no critical transition temperature or a point when water loss increases rapidly, indicating a change in the cuticle. So now we analyzed the dehydration tolerance. And what we found is that it will actually change slightly. If you take the larvae and hold them and dehydrate them slowly at 98% relative humidity, they will actually be able to tolerate losing more water than if you dehydrate them quickly at 0% relative humidity or 33% relative humidity. And so this is kind of a change that usually you don't see in a lot of insects. To increase our internal water pool, we wanted to identify if they were able to absorb water vapor from the air. And so what you can see here is we took the larvae, held them at different relative humidities, and found that they can only increase our water pool at 100% relative humidity. And what occurs here is that this is just passive water that will diffuse back into the insect. And so this indicates there's likely no water vapor uptake mechanism. So we wanted to double verify this by first on the graph on the bottom, is what we did is we took the larvae, held them at 75% relative humidity for 12 to 24 hours, then moved them up to 98% relative humidity. We found they still cannot uptake water from the air. So this indicates that even pre-dehydration will not trigger a water vapor uptake mechanism. So now we want to try to identify methods, mechanisms why this insect could tolerate extremely high levels of dehydration. So the first thing we did was that we analyzed trehalose and glycerol levels. And we found that if the larvae are dehydrated slowly, they're able to increase the amount of trehalose and glycerol within their body more than if they're dehydrated quickly. This gives them more time to respond to dehydration stress. And so both of these act to help protect the insect's organelles, membranes, stuff along those lines during dehydration. Now we also analyzed oxygen consumption as the larvae became dehydrated and found that there's a significant reduction in oxygen consumption during dehydration. So they'll actually probably lose less water through the respiratory route as they begin to dry. Behaviorally, we wanted to analyze if clustering was a mechanism they used to reduce water loss rates. And what we found is that larvae held in groups of 5, 10, and 20 were able to hold onto their water better than individual larvae. And this indicates that clustering is a mechanism that these larvae use to prevent dehydration. And this is important because in the field, we would see these clusters forming under dry, substrate that's beginning to dry. And so this occurred a lot, and this is a mechanism that we actually think occurs in the field. Next, for the cuticular hydrocarbons, we found no differences in the total mass of the cuticular hydrocarbons throughout the study as they dehydrated. But we did find a slight shift in the type of hydrocarbons. So there's a shift towards longer hydrocarbons, as you see on your guys' right. And what it is it indicates there's longer hydrocarbons. So the waterproofing layer on the insects may become more effective as they dehydrate, but it's not going to be thicker with more hydrocarbons. For the metabolomic analysis, what you can see here is that we analyzed the heat, the cold, and the desiccation, and found that there was a lot of things that changed during these stresses. But the biggest thing we'll notice here is that the cold and desiccation have a very big overlap. It's the region right this region right in here. There's a huge overlap in the metabolites change during cold and dehydration. This indicates that a cross tolerance may occur. And so this what we see is that maybe desiccation will promote cold tolerance. And so the next thing that we did is we took the larvae, dehydrated them first, and then compared them to fully hydrated larvae after exposure to cold. And what you can see here is that larvae that were dehydrated, that have lost 30% of their water content, are extremely resistant to cold temperatures when compared to control larvae that are fully hydrated. So this indicates that dehydration promotes cold tolerance. So in conclusion, the larvae are extremely hydrophilic, but can tolerate a loss of 70% of their water content. This is extremely high. Most insects can only tolerate losing about 30 to 40% of their water before succumbing to dehydration. To reduce the stress of dehydration, the concentrations of certain sugars, polyols, and amino acids were increased. This will act to help protect the internal contents of the midge as they become dehydrated. The respiration is reduced, and so likely less water be lost through the respiratory route. Changes in the lipid type occur, but not the amount. And so what this indicates is that maybe the waterproofing layer on the insect is more effective, but it's not going to be thicker. So this likely contributes minimally to the reduction in to the increased dehydration as larvae dry. Lastly, what we see in relation to dehydration is that behavioral clustering seems to occur a lot. And so what this happens is that as the substrate will begin to dry, the larvae seem to move together into the small clusters. And this will reduce water loss by about 5 to 6%. And so this may be an extremely important behavioral mechanism the larvae use to reduce water loss. And lastly, we saw the cross tolerance that desiccation does promote cold tolerance. And so this suggests that some things such as cryoprotective dehydration may occur. This is where the larvae will dehydrate before the winter in order to prevent damage from cold. I'd like to thank Dr. David Denlinger for allowing me to go on this trip. Some of the other people in here, Giancarlo Lopez Martinez, Dr. Rick Lee for going to Antarctica with me twice, Michael Olenitsky, he's a research student from Miami University, Glenn Schulte, he was our high school teacher for this trip, the Palmer Station research staff, which is where we did all this work. They provided all the equipment for us, all that stuff, and they were very helpful throughout the study. And then lastly, the National Science Foundation for supporting this research project, because without them giving us this money, none of us in our research lab would have been able to take this amazing trip to Antarctica. So thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. How long was it?
Any questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
We're
trying to actually work on that right now. We're having a lot of trouble because usually they start freezing before we can really analyze it. And we're trying to pick the exact light conditions, cold conditions that seem to induce diapause. We're having trouble pinpointing that exactly. So we're not 100% sure if they have it or not. And we still have a whole bunch of larvae we brought back with us from Antarctica from a trip last year. And we're exposing them to a lot of different conditions to see if they have it. But we're not sure if they have a diapause or not yet. No, we can't rear them in the lab. We're just allowed to bring them back with us. And it's just the problem is, when rearing them in the lab, we just run out of their food. Like, we're allowed to bring them back along with a certain amount of Praxiola, which is the algae that they eat.
Right.
And so usually we run out of that after about a year or so. And so the biggest problem is we can't rearm the lab because we really run out of our food source. And so, it seems to be mostly just for drying and stuff. And usually it'll happen is, what it is as the substrate gets dry, they all start moving towards a moist area and eventually form these little clusters, and then it dries through, and then those clusters help to reduce water loss. Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah. Okay, so in high increased pH levels in other courtyards, mm-hmm. what's the better empty desiccant between the tree levels and other courtyards?
Well, he's asking what the better desiccant is between trehalose and other polyols. It depends on more or less the situation. Trehalose is usually probably one of the best ones for preventing the dehydration-induced damage because it's just a non-reducing sugar. And so as it's present there, it helps to prevent overall damages and a lot of the organelles, proteins, stuff along those lines. And a lot of like the really anhydrobiotic midges that you see in other places, they use this one a lot as well. And so usually it's probably the best one to help prevent the addition. In these insects? We haven't, the glycerol will show the same anti-desiccant effect, but we haven't really, we've analyzed some other ones in previous studies, but we're not quite 100% sure what their effects are.